Chapter 14. 2,000 feet above Skalshaugen Harbor, the Bell 206 Jet Ranger helicopter that had been tracking the yacht along the coast came to a hover and focused its Westcam high-resolution surveillance camera on the launch, making its way to shore. The man in the pilot seat stared at a video monitor, watching as a lone passenger disembarked from the boat. The helicopter pilot had a pie-shaped face with high cheekbones, marked with vertical tattoo lines. His coal-black hair was cut in bangs over his low forehead, characteristics that might lead a casual observer to take him for a native of the northern tundra. But the features normally associated with the Eskimo were distorted. In place of a pleasant smile was a cruel, leering expression. Eyes that should have twinkled with innocent good humor were as hard as black diamonds. The brownish-red skin was pockmarked as if the corruption within had seeped through the pores. The hastily applied bandage taped across the man's crushed nose intensified the grotesque image. "We have the target in view," he said with a nasal snarl, speaking in an ancient language that had its origins under the Aurora Borealis. The electronic signal from the camera that was housed in a pod beneath the cockpit was converted into microwaves and transmitted instantaneously to the other side of the globe, to a darkened room where pale gray eyes watched the same picture seen from the helicopter. "I can see him quite clearly," the gray-eyed man said. His silky voice was quiet and cultured, but it had the sullen menace of a rattlesnake. "Who is this person who violated our security so easily?"
"His name is Kurt Austin."
A pause. "The same Austin who rescued the Danish sailors from their sunken ship?"
"Yes, Great Tanuk. He is a marine engineer with the National Underwater and Marine Agency."
"Are you certain?"
"A mere engineer wouldn't have been so bold or resourceful to penetrate our facility. And why would Numa be interested in our operation?"
"I don't know, but our watcher has verified his identity."
"And the yacht that picked him up and drove off your men, is it a Numa vessel?"
"As far as we know, it is private, of Spanish registry. We're checking on the ownership through our sources in Madrid."
"See that it is done speedily. What is the latest damage report at our facility?"
"One guard dead. We were able to repair the damaged pipes and save the prime specimens."
"The guard deserved to die for being careless. I want the specimens moved to Canada immediately. Our experiments are too vital to be jeopardized."
"Yes, Great Tanuk."
"An idiot can see what has happened. Mr. Austin has somehow drawn a connection between Oceanus and the collision we so conveniently arranged."
"That's impossible."
"The evidence is in front of your eyes, Umilik. Don't argue with it. You must deal with the situation." The pilot tightened his grip on the controls, ready to send the helicopter swooping down like an eagle. The cruel eyes watching the remote monitor followed the figure making its way from the fish pier to the parked car. Within seconds, he could launch his rockets or spray the target with flesh-shredding machine gun fire and obliterate the life of a bothersome man. The thin lips widened in a cruel smile.
"Should we kill Austin while we have him in our sights?"
"Do I detect a yearning to avenge the damage to your precious nose?"
The voice had a mocking tone to it.
Without waiting for an answer, he said, "I should kill him for the trouble he has caused me. Had he allowed the Danish sailors to die, the revulsion of the world would be directed at SOS, and the attention of the press diverted away from Oceanus."
I will do it now. No! Don't be impatient. We must not attract any more attention to his demise than necessary. He is staying at an isolated cottage. It would be the perfect place. We could drop his body off a cliff. Then see to it, but make it look like an accident. Austin must not be allowed to broadcast his findings to the world. Our plans are at a critical stage. I will return to the base and organize our men. I will see that Austin enjoys a lingering death, that he experiences fear and pain as the life drains from his body, that... No. Have someone else do it. I have other plans for you. You must leave for Canada immediately to make sure the specimens get there safely. Then you were to go to Washington and eliminate that senator who opposes our legislation. I have arranged cover for you and your men. The pilot glanced with fierce longing at the monitor and touched the tender mush that was his nose. As you wish, he said with reluctance. His hands played over the cyclic pitch control, and a moment later the hovering helicopter darted off in the direction of the old harbor. Unaware how close he had come to an imminent end, Austin sat behind the steering wheel of Professor Jorgensen's Volvo, contemplating his next move. He was wary about the remote location of the cottage. He gazed at the warm lights of the town, then grabbed his duffel and left the car. He walked into the village without encountering a soul and went up to the house behind the church. Pia beamed when she opened the door at his knock and invited him inside. The exertions of the day must have been apparent in his face. When he stepped into the light, her smile disappeared. "Are you all right?" she said with concern in her voice. Nothing a glass of akvavit couldn't help. Clucking like a mother hen, she ushered him to the kitchen table, poured him a tall glass of akvavit, then watched as he drank. "Well," she said finally, "did you catch many fish?" "No, but I went to visit the mermaids." Pia let out a whooping laugh, clapped her hands, and poured him a couple more fingers of liquor. "I knew it," she said with excitement in her voice. "And were the caves as wonderful as my father said?" She listened like a child as Austin described his entry through the mermaid's gate at slack tide and his journey into the cave network. He told her he would have stayed longer, but men with guns chased him away. Cursing impressively in Faroese, she said, "You can't go back to the cottage tonight. Gunnar says he doesn't work for those people, but I think he does." I was wondering the same thing. I left the car at the fish pier. Maybe I should leave town. God, no. You'll drive off the road into the sea. No, you will stay here tonight and leave early tomorrow. Are you sure you want a gentleman staying the night? People will talk, Austin said with a broad smile. She grinned back, eyes sparkling with childlike mischief. I hope so. Shortly before dawn, Austin awakened and got up from the sofa. Pia heard him stir and rose to make him a breakfast. She cooked an industrial-sized potato omelet with smoked fish and pastry on the side. Then she packed him a lunch of cold cuts, cheese, and apple and sent him on his way, first eliciting a promise to return. The town was coming alive as he made his way in the damp morning to the fish pier. A couple of fishermen on their way to work waved at him from their trucks as he was opening the car door. The keys slipped from his fingers as he waved back, and when he bent to pick them up, his nostrils picked up a chemical smell and he detected a soft splat-splat sound. He got down on his knees and peered under the car where the odor was even stronger. Fluid dripped where the brake hoses had been cleanly cut. Austin grunted to himself softly, then he went over to the fish pier and asked around for a good mechanic.
The harbor master said he would call, and before long a lanky, middle-aged man showed up. After inspecting the damage, the mechanic stood and handed Austin a section of the hose. "Somebody don't like you. No chance it was an accident." The taciturn Faroese pointed to where the road out of town skirted a cliff and shook his head. "I figure you'd be flying with the birds up there on the first curve. No problem to fix, though." The mechanic repaired the brakes in short order. When Austin went to pay him, he waved away the money. "That's okay. You're a friend of Pia's." Austin said the people who did this might know I was at Pia's. "I wonder if I should talk to the police." "No such thing here. Don't worry. The whole town will keep close watch on her." Austin thanked him again, and minutes later he was driving out of town. As he surveyed the sea stack in his rearview mirror, he mentally ticked off the events of his short stay in Skalsholm. He was leaving town with more questions than answers. "Look on the bright side," he told himself with a grin. He had made some terrific new friends.